You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast. My name is Joe Pritchard, and with me this week is our buddy, Dr. Rouge.
Very good. By the way, I learned something. I like that. I've learned something about your family this week.
You did?
And you told me.
I did. What did I tell you?
Apparently, your mother-in-law is a Pittsburgh Steelers fan.
Yes, yes, she is.
I'm going to keep that in my back pocket.
Oh, well, what for?
Because, and I understand she listens to the show, which is awesome. And so, you know, she probably knows that I loathe the No Fun League. But I will send a special shout out to her one week when the Steelers fall flat on their face in one particular game. And then, of course, you know, she can, through you, send me a nasty reply the next week when they win, and then it'll all be good.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time I've had her send a nasty reply through me to one of my friends. But I have my best friend in Winnipeg is a Baltimore Ravens fan, so that makes for some fun conversations at times.
Oh, that makes for some fun conversations. Yes.
Yes, it does.
Have you ever had to put them, like, have they ever been in the same room and your arms are extended, like, you know, you back up and you back up?
Haven't gotten to that point, but they usually the couple times that's happened, they've steered clear of that.
All right, this is good. Now, do your in-laws live in Wisconsin, and there's a reason I ask, because as you know, I'm heading up that direction later this year.
They do. They live closer to the lake than I do, though.
All right. So perhaps, depending upon how schedules go, if there's a chance, you know, she can, you know, wave a terrible towel right in my face or something and get even with me, you know, that kind of thing. all good natured, of course. You know,
yes.
As you know, I like to. You know, I like to poke fun, but I also realize that when you poke fun, even if it is good-natured, that, you know, you've got to be prepared to, you know, take it as well as you give it. So that's good.
Yep. Sometimes you get people tweeting at you things like, "No Rouge for you."
No. Who would do something like that?
I have no idea. It wouldn't be me. I'm clearly innocent.
No, not you.
Clearly innocent.
You would not test my patience in that way. No, never.
Never, no. I actually meant always. Not never, always.
Oh, pulling Donald Trump, are we?
Not on purpose. Not on purpose.
Okay.
But let's...
You misspoke.
Of course. That's exactly what happened there. Now
we should get this show started.
Probably. I mean, if anybody's still listening, I'm sorry. I do feel like we need to start off with some less than great news, unfortunately, from the CFL. The CFL released a statement today on the release of Teague Sherman from Ottawa over the weekend. Apparently Sherman is in some legal trouble. There are some charges of sexual assault against him. So the league statement is this. The Canadian Football League is aware that sexual assault charges have been filed against Teague Sherman. He was released by the Ottawa Redblacks. Commissioner Randy Ambrosi has informed all member clubs that the leagues will not register a contract for Sherman should any team attempt to sign him. The Canadian Football League has and abides by a policy on violence against women and condemns violence against women in all its forms. Never like to see
Good.
A situation like this, but I feel
Good.
Like the league.
I mean, simple answer.
I feel like, you know, the league is stepping
simple
up here.
Answer.
Yes.
Yes. And frankly, you know, this is an example of the CFL being significantly further ahead than other leagues in making clear to its players that, look, playing in this league is a privilege. to play the game of football professionally is a privilege. And if you do something that is a embarrassment is not even the right word. It's the word that comes to mind, but it's something far stronger than that. I'm trying to be somewhat diplomatic. But if you do something that is a professional or a personal embarrassment to you and to the team and to the league, in terms of, you know, a treatment of women, then go away. And yes, let the case go through the legal process. If you are acquitted, we can talk. If you are not acquitted, then there's nothing for us, you know, to continue saying. It is absolutely, you know, a policy that I think every sports league should adopt. Frankly, I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, when I said good, I meant it. I think that's the right way to handle it. You're gone. When your legal situation gets taken care of, then we'll see if you have a future.
Yes, and it's not the first time the league has done this either. Justin Cox and Euclid Cummings over the past few seasons have been in the same crosshairs. So it seems like the league is attempting to make this a clear statement, a clear policy across the board. The one thing I could see the league failing on is not knowing about a player, a new player coming into the league, having this sort of thing have happened in the past. But they did have that happen with Justin Cox, and when it reared its ugly head again, they were very quick to make the call to not certify a contract for him again. So I think they've at least established that if it happens when you're in the league, that's that.
See ya. Yeah, and that's it. You know, and like I said, that's the way it ought to be. And I applaud the commissioner and the people around him for, you know, sticking with a policy that is defensible today, defensible tomorrow, and absolutely the right thing to do. You know, and again, let the legal situation take care of itself. And if there is a future based on that, based on a favorable legal decision for Sherman, sure, then there's something to talk about. If there isn't, doors closed, go somewhere else.
All right, let's go back to our fun frivolities from earlier. It was that's a lot more fun to do, but I definitely felt like we needed to get that out in front at the beginning of the show. But let's talk about a couple of wide receivers that have seen their primes go past at this point. Nick Lewis is apparently retiring a Calgary Stampeder on Friday.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from Nick Lewis on Wednesday, meaning today, which is the day obviously that we are recording this podcast, and it said something like, I forget the exact words, but you know, one final trip to Calgary or something along those lines. And as I understand it, on Friday he will sign a one-day contract that will allow him to, you know, retire as a Stamp. You know, and in some ways I think, you know, although he set obviously a heck of a lot of records in Montreal, and probably set the most important record in Montreal for him, I think when you look back, if you'd say to people, okay, when Nick Lewis goes in the Hall of Fame, or when you think of Nick Lewis as a player 5, 10, 15 years from now, which team are you going to think of him being with? And I think most people would say the Stamps. This has a, yeah, good feel, you know, to it. And my assumption is that he will be recognized at the game on Saturday when, you know, Calgary plays Montreal. And I think it's appropriate that Montreal is the other team in this case. You know, the timing of this is probably not accidental. And obviously, I think the two teams involved, you know, highlight that. This is the right thing for Nick Lewis. And, you know, if he's recognized the game on Saturday, I'm assuming he will be. You know, you're going to hear maybe the loudest roar of the night from the McMahon crowd when, you know, he is celebrated as a Stamp.
And definitely well-deserved, and I'm glad to see that that'll be happening. Now they're Calgary is neighbors to the north, maybe talking to a receiver that's even older than Lewis, maybe wants to to rekindle his prime. So Terrell Owens, known down in the States and probably all over Canada too as T.O., has activated the 10-day window where a player must receive a contract offer, otherwise must be removed from the negotiation list. And being he's Edmonton's property, that gives Edmonton 10 days to move on that. So 44-year-old Owens is still running fast from all reports, but hasn't played outdoor professional football anyway since 2010. What do you make of this?
Well, I think that last statement is the one that jumps out at me. He hasn't played in a real, and I'm not trying to diss indoor football, but you know, he hasn't played in a real football game in close to 9 years. I just don't think this is a move that Edmonton ought to make. You know, I look at that receiving core and I think that, you know, even with, I just lost his name. The guy who had the great season last year, who's now in Minnesota,
Zylstra.
Thank you. Even with Zylstra, you know, gone, that they've been able with Walker and with Williams to have two real big time, chances, or not chances, but receivers for Mike Riley to work with. Do I think Terrell Owens is a bad guy in the locker room? No. Do I think some of this is publicity? Absolutely. I just, you know, if Terrell Owens were 37 and the Esks needed another receiver, yeah, take a chance. But at 44, and with a team that really needs, if it needs to pick up people and get stronger, it's on defense, I pass on it.
Yeah, I know Edmonton's gone through their share of injuries over the past few years now, but it just doesn't seem like there's a fit there. The only thing I can think of is maybe they're holding out, trying to get some sort of a draft pick for putting a guy on a list, and maybe hoping somebody bites, but I don't see a fit.
I don't see
a fit here. I don't think Edmonton needs any sort of publicity stunt, to be honest, is what it would be if they signed him. So I'm confused. I'm very, very confused.
I am as well. I don't do it. You know, if you look at Edmonton, I mean, I know Calgary, fairly or unfairly, is the standard by which every franchise in the league is measured. But, you know, Edmonton, to me, has never come off as a we got to make a big splash kind of move. We need to generate more headlines. You know, they've got a really good season going despite the injuries. I just don't do it. I do not bring them in.
All right. Well, let's move on to this week's games here. Or last week's games. We'll get to next week's games here momentarily as well. But Calgary going into Ottawa, everybody expected a close game, and, well, we didn't get that, did we?
You know, if you and I, and Oz as well, we had said at the beginning of the season, this might be the year that you get the stamps, whoever you are, but certainly I think the four teams in the Western Division. I think all three of us thought, you know what, they might win the West, maybe, but you could make a case that they might finish as low as third if Edmonton and Winnipeg really, you know, hit stride and keep going. That defense last week was simply a beautiful thing to look at. You know, if you like defenses that just smothered the opposition, last week was just perfection. It was, you know, anything that the Red Blacks offense tried to do, especially in the first half, went nowhere. They had one, maybe two drives in the second half where you thought maybe they're going to move the ball, but just wow. Absolutely, just, you know, you look at that defense now and you could make a legitimate case they might not give up 20 points in a game this season.
Yeah, that'd be pretty
just
that'd be
wow.
pretty tough to do, but they're averaging under 10 right now, I believe.
Exactly. You know, if they play like they did last week, they're not going to give up a whole heck of a lot of points. And just imagine if this defense had been in place with the Calgary offense of 3 years ago or even 2 years ago. Holy cow. You know, I like when defenses, when a defensive coordinator puts together the sort of perfect scheme and the perfect plan. And last week, Clay Brooks had the perfect plan together. Ottawa just, you know, Ottawa looked awful. I choose not to look at it that way. I choose to look at it as Calgary was as close to perfect as you could be.
Yeah, and they didn't even have their starting quarterback by halftime. Bo Levi Mitchell went down. Still on the fence as to whether he's playing against Montreal or not. They may not need him given it's Montreal, but I would expect him to at least give it a shot. Just my guess on it. But Arbuckle didn't look half bad either, did he?
No, he didn't. And, you know, sure, they kept it vanilla for him. I mean, and they had the benefit of, A, the lead, and, B, knowing that their defense was playing at, you know, at an incredible level. But, you know, similarly, it wasn't hand the ball off to this guy, hand the ball off to that guy, punt. Hand the ball off to this guy, hand the ball. You know, there were a couple of occasions where they clearly were trying to run the A-level offense, so to speak. Sure, do I think against Ottawa when you're up 20 to nothing or whatever the score was at that point, do I think that that's easy, so to speak? Well, as easy as playing professional football or quarterback in professional football is. Sure, I mean, you've got a lot of chips in your corner, but I agree with you. He looked for what they asked him to do, which was pretty vanilla. He didn't show any hesitancy. He didn't show any fear. He didn't show any tentative play. Yeah, I mean, as perfect a night, except for the injury to Bo Levi Mitchell, as perfect a night as it could have been for Calgary.
All right, well, that sums that one up pretty well. Let's talk about Toronto and Edmonton for a few minutes. This Toronto being your team, they've played Edmonton the past few weeks. How are you feeling in the post-Ricky Ray time frame here?
It's not James Franklin's fault, but there's something wrong with that offense. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know if it's the offensive line. I don't know if there's just, you know, some issues with the scheming on the line. I don't know if it's the receiving core in terms of its ability to gel top to bottom. I don't know if it's S.J. Green for the first couple of games was not given enough chances or thrown the ball to enough. Maybe it's some combination of those things. Maybe it's none of those things. But, you know, I look at that offense and it's like something's still missing. And I don't have an immediate answer. And yet, you know, they did just enough, thanks to the defense, to beat Edmonton 2 weeks ago. And I'll tell you, they almost did enough to steal the game last week in Edmonton, a game that Oz, you and I looked at and thought, there is no way Edmonton's going to lose to Toronto at home. That game was a heck of a lot closer than I think most people expected it to be.
Oh, I would imagine so. I think we all had – didn't we all have Edmonton last week?
Yep. And comfortably.
And comfortably. Well, I have to ask this too. How does it feel to have your favorite player in football go against you this week?
Yes, it is true that I did love the CFL Twitter person or persons, you know, whoever is responsible for putting that together. One of whoever wrote the tweet made the point that indeed you could make the case that it was the Hugh O'Neill Rouge that won the game. And I, of course, jumped all over that reply. With see, I told you, you know. Hey, look, yeah. I mean, it won the game. Granted, it wasn't the last play of the game. I get that, but a ball that bounced just the right way or the wrong way, depending upon how you want to look at it, gave Edmonton a point that at the time I don't think any of us thought, it's not going to matter. you know, it's one extra point. You know, this game is going to end something like 23-10. You know, it's that one point's not going to matter. And all of a sudden, it was, you know, 16-15, and you're thinking, ooh, you know, the Rouge did win the game. So it was against me, I grant, or against my team. I accept that, but the Rouge did win the game.
I know the feeling, because last year in Toronto, the Bombers had a chance to win the game with a field goal or tie the game with the Rouge. Well, Medlock misses by not very much at all. Ball goes straight to Lira Mihailahu, who hoofs it out of the end zone and and off out of bounds. And the kickout play is the coolest play in the CFL. But it went against my team, and I couldn't even be mad about it.
Wasn't it Toronto and Winnipeg about four-ish, maybe less than that, 3 or 4 years ago now, where the ball went into the end zone, out of the end zone, back in and back out?
That was Montreal, and that was a lot more than 4 years ago.
Really a lot more than that?
Yeah, that will be the standard for the kickout play until it goes back and forth a couple more times.
That will be the standard.
All right.
But, you know, I mean, all seriousness about that game, you know, I think what, and I've mentioned this in the power rankings that I do, Edmonton is such a hard team to judge at this point, because with all of those injuries on defense and guys sort of coming in and not coming in, and, you know, there was a stretch there of maybe a quarter or so when J.C. Sherritt didn't play because of, thankfully, not a serious injury. And that's when Toronto made that comeback. And you could see that one player missing from the middle of defense was such a valuable piece, you know, to what Edmonton is trying to do. You know, Edmonton is 3-2, but let's be honest. If they shut the door in the fourth quarter at Toronto a week and a half ago, they're 4-1 with a defense that in many ways is still barbed wire and scotch tape. Heck of a job being done by Mike Benavides, you know, in terms of putting the right plan together, knowing he doesn't have the projected starting 12, you know, consistently on that field.
No, and that just seems to be the way it's been for the Eskimos over the past few years. So he's had some practice doing that, that's for sure. And now on to a game I don't want to talk about, and like not even at all.
Can't imagine why.
Winnipeg going into BC seemed like a game that, given what happened the week before, the Bombers should have handled, and for the first half they did. But then they did something that they seem to do every time they go into BC, and that's just let it all go to crap in the second half.
Well, yeah, this was another game. Oz, you and I thought there is no way that, you know, BC has a chance. You know, there was an uncertainty about who the quarterback was going to be. This team looks like it might fold up the tent early, and, you know, Wally Buono's last season is going to be a disaster, you know, et cetera. You know, as you and I were chatting just before we started the recording, I said to you that at halftime of that game last week, I had finished my power rankings for the week, and I hit the save button, and then the draft was ready, and I was just going to watch the rest of the game just to see if there's any, you know, little bits and pieces I wanted to add. And suddenly at 1 o'clock in the morning, my time, it's like, oh shoot, you know, it's like, you know, all right, how high does BC go? How low does Winnipeg go? Does that change 2-3? You know, it's like, I got to get this thing done before I go to bed, because I want to, I'll wake up in the morning and think, I just didn't see BC come back. Did I? Hey, let's face it. Travis Lule has that it. I worry about whether his health is going to hold up over the entire, you know, 14 or 15 games that the Lions still have to play. But he has that it. And let's face it, it was 17-0 at halftime. But he threw a first quarter interception in the end zone. And the very last play of the first half, I think it was Brian Burnham, wasn't it? I think it was Burnham, who dropped a what should have been a touchdown pass in the end zone. So, yeah, it was 17-0, but it could have been 17-10, 17-14 at the half. saying that, I did not see BC come off the floor like it did, or imagine that it would have. And similarly, I can't imagine, or wouldn't have imagined, that Winnipeg at one point in the second half would have had seven consecutive offensive possessions that were either two and out or a turnover. It's impossible to blame a defense for a loss when your offense is doing zero.
I don't know what to make of this Bombers team at all.
I don't either.
I don't. I mean, week one was a great game. Kind of weird with all the lightning delays. And, well, Mike Riley is Mike Riley.
Mm-hmm.
They blow the doors off of Montreal. Then they go and play about as bad of a game of football as I've seen them play in a couple of years against Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And that score flattered them. And the next week, they go and blow the doors off of BC. And then the first half, this past week, everything's still looking pretty good. And then all of a sudden, the wheels just come off.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this team has a lot more talent than... It's like this, what we're getting out of this team doesn't equal the sum of its parts. And I don't know if you could point the finger at Mike O'Shea, Richie Hall, Paul Appelese. They've all done great things at various times this season, and some less than stellar things. But there's something just missing right now. And I can't, and just like you with Toronto, I can't put my finger on what's wrong with Winnipeg and why they can't be more consistent with the talent they have.
Well, yeah, and you and I were saying also before we started the recording, if Oz, you and I had a chance to look at the week six standings and we saw Winnipeg at 2-3, I think all three of us would have said, all right, that means that Matt Nichols' injury is worse than feared and Chris Streveler is really struggling as a rookie quarterback in the CFL. If and when Nichols comes back, they ought to get on a roll and get things going. You know, that's sort of the frustrating thing. Streveler, for a rookie, has played very well. His intensity and the passion that he has, you know, I think certainly carries over to the entire team. Nichols has not necessarily played poorly, you know, since he came back from the injury. I don't think he's showing any signs of being hesitant or being, you know, worried or playing, you know, I don't want to get hit or I don't want to run or I don't want to do something dangerous, you know, that kind of thing. You're right. It's, you know, 2-3 based on the talent, meaning Nichols not being out long term, not having major injuries, not having Streveler struggle as a rookie quarterback. 2-3 just doesn't seem to make sense.
No. Certainly does not to me either. Alright, so that's our preview for this week, or that's our review of last week's action. So let's get on with our guest. It is Andrew Hoskins from the Eskimo Empire podcast, and he'll be here to talk Edmonton Toronto. So you two don't fight. And of course,
I'll be on my best behavior.
Of course, a lot of other things. You got to be on a lot more than your best behavior. Come on, man.
Okay, I'll be on my capital B best behavior. How's that?
There we go. Perfect.
That counts.
So let's get to Andrew here, and we'll be back in just a moment. We are here with Andrew Hoskins from the Eskimo Empire podcast. Andrew, it's been far too long since we've had you on the show. You and Dr. Rouge's teams have been doing battle the past couple weeks, so I'm just going to go grab my popcorn while you two go at it.
Nice. Well, thank you for having me back, guys. I really appreciate it, and it's always fun to jump on and chat football with people, so I do appreciate that. And hey, we've got a couple of games to talk about, and I used the word games possibly a little bit loosely because they were a little rough, but hey, good competitive back and forth. And I can't get too mad at him because, you know, he's got my boy playing quarterback for him now, so I gotta be careful.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Joe and I were saying earlier that, you know, one of the things that is sort of maddening about this Edmonton team is you look at the standings and it says 3-2, but they are one quarter, meaning that fourth quarter against Toronto in Toronto a week and a half ago, from being 4-1. And considering that, you know, the defense at times looks like a who's who line, you know, who's the middle linebacker today? Who's the outside linebacker? You know, can you discuss a little bit the job that, you know, Mike Benavides has done, recognizing that seemingly every week it's, do I have this guy back? Do I have that guy back? What do you mean that guy's not going to play? It's like a he's doing a heck of a job of mixing and matching right now. There's no question about that.
Oh, absolutely. I would 100% agree with you. I think that when you think of all of the injuries on the defensive side of the ball, Mike and I were counting them up on Monday night, and we counted 7, and that was prior to this game. So we were missing Johnny Adams. We're missing Forrest Hightower, Arjun Colquhoun, Kwaku Boateng, Adam Konar. And of course, now we're missing, well, we'll see what happens with JC Sherritt, but he missed a majority of that game. Mm-hmm. And then of course, Blair Smith went down, or sorry, Hakuna Matata went down as well. Malumba Shimanga, sorry, we call him Hakuna Matata. And, he went down. And, so, I mean, it's just like, and it, even last year, it was the same deal. He was constantly having to shuffle this lineup, on the defensive side of the ball. And yes, they do have some rough play. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we look back at that Hamilton game and we have, you know, those three rookies playing in the secondary, and they were playing a lot of zone and not real well. So, I mean, it's a tough one because Mike Benavides' system is definitely situational football. And unless you've played in the system a whole lot, you're not really sure where you have to be all the time. So now that we're getting a little bit of consistency, and yes, it's all young guys, but they're, you know, maybe we're swapping one guy out every week instead of three or four. It's actually making it so that you can see that they are playing a little bit better. I have a feeling in practice that they just practice the backups just as hard, just because you just never know. Like it's just some type of witch has got a curse going on the defensive side of the injuries for sure.
So with, I mean, obviously,
yes.
Go ahead.
So you would think with the bye week coming up that that'd be a good thing, but is the defense starting to gel and maybe the bye week might not be so nicely timed?
Actually, I think the bye week is good, especially after the back-to-back games against Toronto that were difficult. I mean, they were hard-hitting games, and especially this game this past Friday where they are having to deal with the weather conditions on top of everything else. I think that it's kind of nice to just get that little bit of a break. When you think back, the Eskimos had kind of a bye week in the last week of training camp because they didn't have a preseason game that third week, but they were still practicing every day and doing all that. So I think actually getting them away from the game from a week will be really helpful. On the other hand, we do have a couple of guys now that are looking to possibly, you know, come back to practice as they get back next week. You look at Arjun Colquhoun that was on a 6-game and he's now done 5, so he could possibly be back. And same thing with Forrest Hightower. So if they are now going to be slotting those guys back in, it's probably good that we have this week to kind of prep and see where we're at. Next week we can start practicing with them, and then the following week after Montreal, those guys could be back in the lineup.
In a perfect world, then, and I know no such thing exists, but in a perfect world, the 12 that were projected to be the starters could be on the field together by what week or by which game?
No, that probably will not happen until very late in the season, if it's going to happen at all, because I look at Johnny Adams, I'm not entirely sure. I know Adams, Hightower, and Colquhoun were all 6-gamed right before game one. So those three have a possibility of coming back, but they haven't, of course, given us any type of idea of what the extent of the injuries are. So, I mean, they could be flipped back onto a 6-game as well. Who knows? Although, I mean, we would love to have all three of those guys back. Kwaku Boateng should be back. Mike Moore, who was a starter, was on the sixth game after game three. So he's not going to be back till likely week nine, or game nine, I should say. And then, of course, now we've got like Konar was, I think, game two. So he's not back until at least game eight. And Hakuna Matata was just now. So if you start looking at all of the actual starters, the closest that we could get, if everything went perfect, is all nine would be back starting in week nine or 10.
Whew.
So that's, you know, just past halfway of the season, right? So mm-hmm. and again, without knowing the extent of these injuries, if last year is any kind of indicator for us, we just go with who we have every week, because you just every week you need a roster chart and you got to figure it out from there.
Yeah,
it is stunning, because, you know, yeah, on paper Calgary's 4-0, they've got that defense that just wiped out Ottawa, you know. And
unreal.
I think everyone is saying, you know, holy cow, might this be a much better Calgary team than anybody imagined? You know, and there's still a part of me that says, yeah, wait a minute, though. Yeah, as great as they're playing, Edmonton could be 4-1.
You know? We could be. Yeah,
they could be 4-1. And again, I'm not diminishing the quality of the players who are on the field, but they're one bad quarter away from being 4-1, and it's a heck of a job that you know Benavides is doing. Because let's face it, by and large, the guys on offense have remained healthy. Although it was a scary play with CJ Gable right at the end of last week's game. Oh, that was scary. And you know, when I don't know how obvious it was, you know, in the stands or in the press box, but you know, I was watching the game here at home, and you know, his eyes had that look like, yeah, I'm awake, but I don't have a clue where I am.
Yeah, it was
that was scary.
It looked that way even from the stands, because they were showing him walking off the field on the big screen, and I mean, I hate to make jokes about this, but I mean, I turned to my wife and said, the doctor just asked him, "What do you know what time it is?" And he said, "Thursday." Like, there's no,
yeah,
like he was not on this planet with us at that particular moment. And which, I mean, you hate to see. And the initial hit, which is where he got knocked out, I mean, that's a football play. That was, you know, he ducked his head, the other guy ducked his head, and whammo, and out he goes, right? So and it's really sad to see when you think that Gable really could be taking off, right? So
yes.
But you're right. Luckily, on the offensive side of the ball, we've had that injury. We've had Hazelton go down, and we had Dreheim go down as a tackle early. But, I mean, to only have three seems like pittance when you compare it to the defensive side of the ball. And can I say, though, how happy I am to hear somebody say, I mean, that Benavides does need some credit for that, because in Edmonton, because the last 2 years they have played a very soft zone, they don't play a very aggressive defense, a lot of the fans here in Edmonton are just anti Benavides, and mm-hmm. I think when you think about how often he has to change how he runs the defense based on the guys that he's got, I mean, it's kind of amazing that we are at a over 500 record at this moment.
Yeah, and if you wipe out week one, because week one was screwy in a lot of different ways.
That was ridiculous. Yeah.
And week two was rough. But ever since then, the defense has been doing its job. It's keeping the other team from scoring a lot of points. So maybe...
Well, yeah, the last three games, it's all been 23 points or less.
Yeah.
And you can't ask for more than that from a defense.
No, if
you
can hold... not in this league. I mean, it feels like the scoring is down this year. That's just my personal observation. But still, if you're holding a CFL team under 20 points, you should win that game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's going both ways, right? You look back at that week one game with Calgary and Hamilton, and that one could have gone either way as well. It was just, again, like you said, Marty, in that fourth quarter, it just changed, right? So we're having a lot of close games, but you're right, Joe, there's not as much offense as we're used to seeing. So if your defense is actually holding guys to 20 points or under, they're doing what they're supposed to do. Then beyond that, the offense has got to be able to score more than 20.
you mentioned the offense, and Joe and I at the top of the show were discussing a couple of wide receivers who are in the news, one being Nick Lewis, who is going to sign that one-day contract. I think it's going to be on Friday and then retire as a stamp. And
as he should.
Of course, as he should. That's exactly what Joe and I were saying. And then there is what could be a circus if Terrell Owens signs. I know you didn't have the benefit of hearing the beginning of the show. What Joe and I essentially said and agreed upon was if this team had three wide receivers down and Mike Riley was throwing the ball to guys you'd never heard of before, maybe you take a chance on a Terrell Owens. I just don't think you do. Edmonton, to me, from an outsider looking in perspective, doesn't come off as the kind of franchise that says we got to make a big splash and we got to do something to, you know, have more people covering us at practice or to generate some really interesting ticket sales. You know, to me, that's not the kind of franchise that is. So my suspicion is, again, from the outside looking in, Owens is never going to play it down for the Eskimos.
I would agree. I would be shocked, honestly. I think they added him to the negotiation list because it does keep them. I mean, that is a bit of a splash. It's a bit of a, hey, what's going on? Like, mm-hmm. Terrell Owens, people know that name, right? And I think him triggering the 10-day clause is because if he is interested in coming up to the CFL, I think he would rather go east. And I actually think Nick Lewis even said that on Twitter, that he felt that if he was going to come up, that he would end up in an Eastern team. And because I look at it from an Eskimo standpoint. Now, if we were the injuries on the offensive side of the ball that we did on the defensive side of the ball, then we might be having a completely different conversation. But mm-hmm. when we've got Darrell Walker and Duke Williams and Kenny Stafford and Bryant Mitchell, who are all American receivers, and as it is, we don't really have a spot for all four of them, why would we bring in another receiver that is 10 years most of their elder and has a great 40 time, but I don't know if he can run it back and forth with a 20-second clock? Like, it's mm-hmm. I really do think that I think the Eskimos might do the base offer and of course he won't take because there's no way he takes a minimum salary and then he stays on the negotiation list, but I don't think there's anybody out there that's going to trade for him either unless they really do want that splash. So but I'd be really surprised to see if he ended up here one way or the other at this particular moment.
Yeah, I have to say that just with all the research I've done into CFL history and everything I've seen ever since I got very deep into the league, I do hold the Eskimos to probably a higher standard than I hold any other team in the league to, as far as how they conduct their off-field business, and they usually meet that. So that this does come out of left field for me. But I guess if we throw logic out the window for a moment, if he does sign, are you going to be changing the push-up chant to a sit-up chant when the receivers drop the ball?
Never. Never. It's always going to be push-ups. It's always going to be push-ups. The best part is every time I go to practice now, if Bryant misses one, he will do push-ups, and it makes me laugh every time. I'm like, you listen to the show. I love it. But it's no, it'll always be push-ups. But if something happens and he does come up here, I'd be going to practice just to see what it looked like in comparison. Cause I mean, yeah, he was a big time NFL receiver. So does that make him a big CFL receiver? Well, no, we'd have to actually see him get out there and see if he could do it. And I'd be very curious to see Jason Moss be pushing Terrell Owens to be like, okay, got to get back 20 seconds. Got to be back 20 seconds. Let's go mm-hmm. and see how that actually worked out. But it'd be very curious to me anyway. But I mean, you know, Brock is also a guy that is really, really connected. So maybe he knows something that we don't. That's what I'm going to go with.
I would have to assume so, because every once in a while, the Eskimos will make a move that just makes me scratch my head, but there always seems to be a method to the madness once you take a deeper look.
Yes.
Maybe there's something I'm missing, but I'm clearly missing it at the moment.
Well, I do appreciate the fact that you hold them in such high esteem. That's nice. And being a fan for so long, I have standards for them too. I kind of want them to, you know, when this first was announced, I'm like, really? We don't need to have that here. Like,
well, that's exactly the thought I had. It's like, the Eskimos of all teams don't need to be doing this. What are they doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and you know, I think on the other hand, I mean, let's face it, it's the bye week, and what are everybody talking about? The Edmonton Eskimos.
So that might be the method to the madness right there.
It definitely could be. Absolutely, yeah.
One thing that has been, I think, sort of a phenomenal success this season already is knowing that the Grey Cup is coming in November. You know, and hey, I still think there's a pretty good chance that Edmonton could be, you know, one of the teams playing in that game. But describe how that community and that fan base, you know, has wrapped itself around the festival, the game, you know, and all of that. I think I'm remembering this correctly. I think it was all but about 4,000 seats were sold out, like in the first, or were sold in the first 72 hours. My math may be a little fuzzy.
It was 5,000 left in 72 hours, and in the 5 days they were under 4,000 as last I heard.
Wow. I got,
and that's a 52,000 seat stadium.
Yeah
So it's you know what, Edmonton really gets behind having the Grey Cup here, and I don't know if that's because of the success that the team had in the 80s, and so there is that nostalgia to that time when the Grey Cup was just assumed we were playing in it, or if it's just that people in Edmonton really like the party. Because I mean, in 2010, you know, that party was something else. And I give all the credit to the Grey Cup Festival committee that's here, like especially Dwayne Veneau. He's been involved now, I think this is his third one, and they just know what to do, and they know how to get the right people on board to make the whole week just a huge event. And so I think a lot of people get drawn to come to the game just based on the rest of the event as well. So, I mean, we, you know, the in 2010, it was the zip line and the, I can't remember what's the other thing they had. Everything was in like a 4-block radius downtown. It's a huge party. And then they had set up over by City Hall. There was a mini field, and they were playing on that. And all of that is coming back. But then they're bringing so much more. They're bringing a tube slide. They're bringing a mini ski hill. They're bringing a bungee jump. All of these things are all going to be part of the festival downtown. And as people kept hearing about it, I think it just really, really wrapped everybody up in, I need to be here. I need to be mm-hmm. part of this. And yeah, the Grey Cup committee festival is just, our festival committee is just amazing. Like, they are really, really doing everything they can to bring people out to have a great time. And I think that's what's going to happen in November. I'm excited for it.
Good. I am very much looking forward to that. Hoping to see some of that, but of course there's always the great events that are put on every year as well, so it'd be interesting to see how that's all blended together and how they put together that experience. I think I'm going to be having myself a lot of fun in November.
Oh, I would think so. Are you both headed up, or just you, Joe?
I am for sure. I don't know. Yeah,
unfortunately, I got to make a pass this year, but I know I'm going to be watching the game on Sunday night here in the States, just going, oh.
You know? It looks like it's so fun. Yeah.
It's like, I know what that's like, and everybody's having a good time, and I'm in my living room. No, I mean, it's this year's not to be, but that's okay. I will, in some ways, Joe lived vicariously through me last November, and I will live vicariously through him this November. Chances are that means that I'm going to have more vicarious fun than I did real fun, but we'll see what happens.
That's pretty good. Yeah, we'll shower you with tweets. That's how that works. Yeah.
Oh, just rub it in, guys. Just great. Just rub it in. That's okay.
Well, I'm glad you're coming, Joe. That'll be fun. And sooner or later, I'll meet you, Moretti, one of these days.
Indeed. Well, you know, I do have to make a Western trip, so to speak, at some point. And, you know, I do find myself when the schedule comes out every year thinking, all right, if this is the year I make the Western trip, you know, I start looking, does Calgary or Edmonton on a Thursday and Calgary or Edmonton on a Saturday, you know, that sort of logical, you know, combination trip. And, it's not going to happen this year, unfortunately, but, who knows, maybe, in 19, you know, I'll be knocking on your door going, Rouge, you know,
awesome.
Watch you jump sky high, you know?
Awesome. Yeah. We don't even bother with normal communication methods. When it's showtime, all I do is put the light toward the sky that says, Rouge. And, all of a sudden we're all set to go.
Awesome. As it should be.
Pavlov's dogs, you know?
Right. Is that Rouge with like 15 O's and U's?
Absolutely.
Just to make sure.
So
okay, just
spell
making
it with five letters. If you spell it with just the five letters, you are spelling it incorrectly.
That's right. So this last game last Friday was like both exciting and horrible for you because your team lost, but it lost by a Rouge. So it's like,
it's funny that the folks at the CFL Twitter account posted, I think it was right after the game, that, you know, it is true, no matter what you think of the Rouge, this is the reason that Edmonton won this game. And, of course, I wrote right back and said, you got to respect the Rouge, you know, and all this stuff. And yeah, it was a little bittersweet, so to speak. You know, there was a part of me, I do admit, last November at the Grey Cup, I kept thinking, you know, if Haier Lahu misses this field goal, and this game ends 25-24, yeah, I might never go to a CFL game again because I have seen perfection, you know. It's good natured fun, and it certainly it is always enjoyable for me when I get the tweet right after a Rouge going, Moretti, you know, and it's like your turn, you know.
you get those. You know, just like I get those every time Franklin steps on the field. Yeah. Oh, yes. Must be giddy. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
My enablers are out there all over the place.
All right. Well, we'll let you get going, Andrew. Can you tell our fans where they could find your show?
Absolutely. And again, thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it. You can find us, I can find all of our links on our website, eskempire.ca. But on Twitter, which is probably where we're most active, is at eskempirepod. And I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about my co-hosts, which do just as much, if not more work than I do, at Duchess Lombardi and at 56 Parkies.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us this week. I'm glad to have you on, and we will have to catch you down the road.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see you here in November, man. Bring your cheese head. We'll bring you to the Turf District and have a few laughs.
All right. I'll see if I can pack it onto a carry-on. If I can make that happen, I'll do it.
Beautiful.
Wear it. Think you could wear it on the plane?
I think at that point I'm asking for an extra security check.
There you go.
Yeah, you're asking to be taken into the little room if you do that, I think.
Yeah.
Andrew, all kidding aside, thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you, guys.
Let's go ahead and talk about this next week's games, because there's a shot at redemption for both of our teams, but only one of them is going to happen.
Unless it's a tie.
But first, let's...
And nobody wants that.
No, nobody does. Because that means then we didn't get a game-winning Rouge out of either team. So let's talk about Saskatchewan at Hamilton. A couple of weeks ago, Saskatchewan pulls off a game that they didn't deserve to win against Hamilton. Hamilton had so many chances to put that game away and didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see Saskatchewan hanging in there at all in Tim Hortons Field, or do you think Hamilton makes up for a little bit of what they left on the field at Mosaic?
To me, the question about – and by the way, I think Hamilton wins the game. But if I'm wrong, then I think the reason that Saskatchewan wins this game is that, you know, there is always that matchup of two teams in which no matter what Team A does, Team B seems to win. And maybe, just maybe, Chris Jones has drawn up the right blueprints on defense to find a way to, you know, bend but don't break. Logic tells me Hamilton wins this game. Logic tells me Hamilton is still the better team than Saskatchewan. I'm picking Hamilton, and I'm doing it with a pretty good degree of confidence, unless, like I said, there is something to this matchup that is just going to work out. Much like you were talking about Winnipeg going into BC, you know, maybe this Hamilton-Saskatchewan matchup this year, maybe, just maybe, Saskatchewan finds the way. But on paper, Hamilton wins this game.
Yeah, I would say that too. Oz agrees as well, but he does believe Saskatchewan's going to cover the 11-point spread. So he's thinking that this is going to be closer than possible. I think we're going to start to figure out what kind of quarterback we're going to see in Jeremiah Mazzulla this year. He's been fantastic mm-hmm. putting up yardage numbers. It's been great.
Mm-hmm.
But the interceptions are a little bit worrying, and the completion percentage against Saskatchewan, he was 23 of 43, which means 20 incompletions, and incompletions are drive killers even more so in the CFL than down south.
Mm-hmm.
I think if he could find a rhythm, if he can keep the ball moving more, I think they could put up a ton of points, given the amount of yardage he puts up. But I think he's got to finish the drives. That was the big reason that they are 2-2 right now, is there's a couple games where they just couldn't finish.
Well, you know, last week we did a pretty in-depth segment talking about Ottawa, and one thing that we were talking about then is, you know, the rap against Trevor Harris, fair or unfair, but it is the rap, is that, you know, lots of lots of yards, great completion percentage, doesn't win a game. I am nowhere near believing that Jeremiah Mazzulla is going to be lots of yards, okay on points, throws too many interceptions, and Hamilton finishes 9-9. I'm not there. I still think Hamilton is the best team in the East. You know, and yeah, he's had the, as many teams in the East have, they've played a lot of teams out West. So the talent difference and the results are going to be a little bit herky-jerky. I still see no reason to come close to waving any sort of flag of concern about Jeremiah Mazzulla, unless we see something this week where, yet again, you know, Hamilton finishes with 450 yards of offense and 14 points. You know, and he throws two or three interceptions or something along those lines. Publicly, June Jones still backs him. I think the fan base in that city still backs him. But it's fair to ask, four touchdowns, four interceptions for, you know, a team that is, again, probably the best in that division, that's a little concerning.
Yeah, I think we're a long way from talking about the guy on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
But I think mm-hmm. if we want to put Mazzulla in the top tier of CFL starting quarterbacks, I think you have to start fearing him when he's got the ball with mm-hmm. under 3 minutes to go and you're up four. If you put him back there, you're probably not feeling too out of sorts. You put a guy like Mike Riley back there, you're shaking in your boots.
Well, here's the thing: take Riley and Mitchell off the discussion for a minute.
Okay.
You are a CFL team, or you're a CFL defensive coordinator. Your team is up by four, so a field goal isn't going to help. your team is up by four. The opposition has the ball at, say, its own 40-yard line. So they've got to go 70 yards for a touchdown. Who is the CFL quarterback you least want to see right now? Again, don't talk Riley, don't talk Mitchell, because those would clearly be the first two choices. There isn't a clear right now third guy.
There's room for that guy. I don't think mm-hmm. Matt Nichols is there. I'd feel pretty mm-hmm. good if I'm in Winnipeg's shoes in that scenario and he's there. But as an opposing defense, I'm like, thank goodness it's not somebody else. I think Travis Lulay might be the sneaky third pick here, though.
He's played one game.
But when he's played in the last few years, he's been the kind of guy that can make the big play when he needs to.
And I think prior to the Ricky Ray injury, everybody would have said the top three, Riley, Mitchell, Ray, whatever order you want to put them in, I don't care. Those would have been the three that you'd have said, if I'm up by four, you know, what quarterback do I not want to see if I'm the opposing defensive coordinator? Those would have been the three names that you know, clearly would have jumped out. There is a spot for Mazzoli. There's a spot for Harris. There's a spot for Nichols to jump in and be the next guy. And, you know, here's a chance this week for Mazzoli to do it, you know, against a guy who, you know, like Chris Jones, don't like Chris Jones, it's irrelevant. There is the perception that Chris Jones can be the sort of mad scientist on defense and make the right kind of calls. He certainly did 2 weeks ago. If that happens again this week and Saskatchewan upsets Hamilton, wow. I don't see that happening, though. I think Hamilton has one of those statement games that says we are still the best team in the East and we're going to prove it.
All right, so we've got three games left here, and we're starting to run a little short on time, so let's make this a bit more of a lightning round here. So we've got BC and Ottawa to lead us off here. A couple of teams that are right in the middle of the pack, and it's hard to know what to expect from them. What do you got in this one?
I can't imagine Ottawa having an embarrassment 2 weeks in a row. I suspect Ottawa wins this game. If it doesn't, and Travis Lulay is basically the reason why, I think we really got to suddenly consider that, you know, BC might have turned a corner unexpectedly and Ottawa might have taken a gigantic step back in the past 2 weeks. Again, that would mean consecutive home losses against Western Division teams wouldn't be a good sign.
No, Oz believes that Ottawa is going to beat a 6.5 spread. I tend to agree with him too, because Ottawa's had four games so far, I believe. Two against mm-hmm. Calgary and two against not Calgary. And when they play not Calgary, it tends to turn out well for them. When they play Calgary, well, not so much. So I think
BC is not Calgary.
No, I think we can agree on that so far. So let's hop down to Winnipeg and Toronto. So we're going to be able to talk about this one
Shouldn't we do that one last?
Okay, fine. Montreal-Calgary. I mean, if that takes us more than a minute, I'll be shocked.
As I jokingly said to you before we started to record, every season has that one game that you go, how in the world did that team win? That's not going to be this week. No. Calgary.
I agree with you, and Oz agrees with you. So, yeah, we got that done in about 15 seconds. And, of course, Montreal will win and make us all look like morons. Mm-hmm. Winnipeg
no.
at Toronto. We're going to get a double dose of this because it's a home and home again. So what do you think?
If Toronto's offense can have that game that it hasn't had yet, presuming that what we've seen with the Toronto defense is something that's going to stick around for the entire season, then I think Toronto wins this game. I'm going to go with the Argos and put our friendship at risk.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to get too mad at you because I don't know which Bomber team is going to show up. I've seen this Bomber team play very, very well. I've seen this Bomber team play rather, rather poorly. I haven't really seen Toronto's offense play all that well. So if Winnipeg's offense does play well, I think that one's going to go Winnipeg's way. Oz tends to agree with me, and he wants to take an over on this one of 51.5 points because no one can stop the Bombers' offense, and the Bombers' defense can't stop anyone from scoring. So he's expecting a shootout. I'm not, but I feel like the Bombers' offense has more of a chance of having a good game than the Argos offense. It feels like a bit of a risk. I was on the Argos fan cast last night, which should be out sometime in the next day or so, hopefully. I picked Winnipeg 27-20, and I'll stick with that.
This is by far of the four games this week the hardest to predict, because Toronto and Winnipeg have both been just inconsistent enough. The stunning thing is one of these teams is going to have four losses after this week. And it's either going to be Winnipeg with two wins and four losses or Toronto with one win and four losses. Yeah, I know the Eastern teams have played a lot of Western teams, but if it is indeed Toronto at 1-4, ouch.
Yeah, that would be a tough hole to climb out of when the division games start to happen. And whoever loses that game goes and faces that same team the next week, trying to pick up the pieces of their season.
Mm-hmm. Or seeing, again, if one of these teams loses consecutive games, ouch. You know, you are looking at the potential for, even if it is Toronto at 1-5, the potential for there being just too much of a distance to make up against Hamilton or Ottawa. And if it's Winnipeg at 2-5, oh boy, the pressure on Mike O'Shea and Richie Hall and Paul Appelese during that first bye week is going to be intense.
Yeah, I would say the only good news for Toronto if they fall is that Ottawa and Hamilton play each other the next week. And then after that, the Argos get Ottawa. So they'd have a chance to get some ground caught up on pretty quickly. But that's not something they want to be doing. They want to be trying to climb over that other team and not just try to keep up with them.
Agreed. This is the toughest game of the week to predict. And it's also the one where you say to the team that loses, oh, boy. You know, now you're looking at four losses with the potential of five, 6 days later. Woohoo! That's tough stuff.
All right. So let's get the show on the road for this week. Any final thoughts?
Just to go back to what we said earlier, I think for Nick Lewis to go out as a stamp, and even Andrew mentioned it in the segment we had with him, I think that is absolutely, there's a little bit of perfection there. You know, that's where, you know, it ought to be. And, you know, so I am looking forward to seeing that loud response from the fans there in Calgary when he, again, I'm assuming he's going to step on the field and wave and, you know, that sort of thing. I am looking to see that really large and loud response.
Yeah, I would imagine that'll be quite the scene on Saturday night. So we'll be tuning in for sure. And hopefully, you'll be tuning in to us next week as well for the Rouge, White, and Blue. I'm Joe Pritchard with Dr. Rouge. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.